Again, I want to thank Aura and all these student activists. I think hearing these past few student speakers has reminded us of the different places people are coming from, and it's really actually in me just sitting here sparked a hope in this in the next couple of days and what's going to come together when all these ideas start coming together and we really start building a movement together. Our next and final speaker, we're very fortunate to have Professor Sami El-Aryan. He's the president of the National Coalition to Protect Political Freedom, which is a coalition of 40 organizations coming together against the secret evidence laws. He's also a professor of computer science and engineering at the University of South Florida, which has given him a lot of media attention because he was recently given notice for his job because of speeches he gave 14 and 15 years ago regarding to Palestine. And today he's going to speak on his situation and about the Palestinian Solidarity Movement. He's come here from South Florida in this kind of crucial time, and we really want to thank him for taking the time to speak to us and to this movement.
Thank you very much. Thank you very, very much for this welcome. I want to thank the organizers for this outstanding conference. My brothers and sisters, I want to start with saying peace be upon you all. There's no doubt that on September 11th, a tragic crime took place. But also a horrendous crime took place over a half century earlier. I, and along with 7 or 8 million Palestinians, are the body of that crime. The perpetrators of the crime would like to get rid of the body of crime so that no one would talk about it. We refuse to let that happen. Palestinians today are standing up, little children, women, men, old people from around every economic, social class, standing up for the occupation, standing up for the humiliation that has been taking place in the Holy Land today. If you look at what's happening, at least since 1967 onward, what's happening was an orchestrated program and campaign to depopulate the occupied territories so that it could be absorbed within the bigger plan of Greater Israel. And it was the children of the Intifada that started in 1987, little children who knew nothing but Uzis and military jeeps, who knew nothing but occupation and subjugation. These little children stood up with little stones, basically saying to the whole world, including, of course, the occupiers themselves, that we will resist with whatever means at our disposal, including these little stones. The stones that were thrown out at these jeeps and Uzis and soldiers and military occupation and the humiliation at the checkpoints were symbols of resistance and symbols that were sent to the whole world to stand up for justice. We stood up for that. We held conferences. We tried to tell the story of the Intifada. We tried to educate the people about what's going on in Palestine. The fact that later on there wasn't a real peace process, but a piece by piece taken of Palestinian rights. And on September 26, I was invited to a show on Fox. I wasn't much familiar with it. Some people asked me, what were you thinking? I heard it differently. I said, I wasn't drinking. I don't drink. And maybe I wasn't thinking. At any rate, after speaking for about 90 minutes with the producer, it was understood what kind of questions we're going to be talking about. You know, we've been working since September 11th almost on a daily basis to try to heal the community from all segments of society of what's going on, try to understand, make sense of what's going on. And yet, I was invited to that show, you know, asked, you know, A, you know, B, you know, C, these are terrorists, guilt by association, did you say death to Israel, then if I were the CIA, I would be following you around. End of discussion. It was a fascist type of McCarthyist type of interview, but I didn't know that such an interview would end up having hundreds and thousands of emails and death threats coming to the university and always bringing this statement that I said back in 88 and 90 in the heist of the Intifada, death to Israel. I've been asked over and over and over again, what did you mean by that? Does that mean death to the Jews? Which is really, again, the Zionist interpretation, this mathematical formula that they insist on. Jewishness is equal to Judaism, is equal to Zionism, is equal to Jews, is equal to Israel. There is nothing more false than that, and everybody knows it. But yet, they would like to say that death to Israel means death to the Jews. Israel is a regime, is a system that is not much different from the apartheid system. Those who stood up for justice during the apartheid era must stand up against Israeli apartheid in the occupied territories. I once visited, although I am barred from visiting now or even setting foot on my country of origin, a country where on my father's side they lived continuously until 1948 for 900 years, and on my mother's side they lived there for 1400 years. And yet I am barred today from visiting that country, let alone to live in it. I'm still, after everything I accomplished in my life, I'm still identified as a stateless, homeless refugee. When I visited back in 83, when everything was quiet, no suicide bombings, no stones, nothing. We were standing in front of a checkpoint between Egypt and Gaza. And there we saw the soldiers, the way they were treating the Palestinians. You would be coming on a bus, 2 miles away, you will stop. You have to carry your own luggage for 2 miles, and then you'll be staying there, standing there in the sun, and then they will be asked one by one. They wouldn't be asked by their normal names. They would be called, you dog, go there, you donkey, over there, you bitch, over there. That's the kind of language they were using. My wife, who is also a Palestinian, but attained an American citizenship, and because she has an American citizenship, she was able to visit again in 98, 15 years later. As an American citizen, on her way out, not on her way in, on her way out, there is no claim of security here. She's leaving the country, for God's sake. Yet, she was strip searched. She was asked to take off her clothes, which she refused. And for 3 hours, there was an impasse. After taking everything, and she refuses to take off her clothes. And why did they do that? Because they don't want her ever to go back to Palestine. Even with an American citizenship, they don't want her ever to think about going back and taking a trip to visit her ancestral homes. Now today, if you are a Palestinian, you're barred, but if you are a Jew from any part of the world, whether you are from Russia, St. Petersburg, Ukraine, whether you are from Europe, Latin America, whether you're from Brooklyn, Shaker Heights, Ohio, Los Angeles, Berkeley, you can have citizenship tomorrow with no time, with no problems, just because of who you are, your ethnicity. And yet Palestinians today are denied that right. When they started a peace process, which was really based on false assumptions, because Palestinians have given their historical compromise. They signed off historical Palestine on 79% of their ancestral homes. And they thought that would be the prerequisite for real peace and justice. And yet, 9 years later now, 8.5 years later, we see nothing worse in terms of what's happening to the Palestinians. Gaza today is chopped up in four pieces, where if you are on one side and you've got to go to a hospital because your mother had a stroke or a heart attack, she might die at the checkpoint while the hospital is only a mile away because she would not be allowed to go. Or if your wife is pregnant, she might deliver right there while the soldiers are looking. These are things that are actually happening. 1,200 people died, 85% Palestinians. That means if you look at the population between the United States and the Palestinians in the past 15 months had 20 World Trade Center tragedies, 20 September 11s. Because for every 3,000 Americans, you have about 50 Palestinians, and the Palestinians lost more than 1,000 people, with the thousands of others injured, maimed. If you look at the different reports that are coming from the occupied territories, the medical report, the human rights report, most of these injuries are to little children under 15, and they have been targeted from the waist up, not from the waist down. These are real things are happening. There is a program, basically, to dehumanize, as another speaker said, the Palestinians. And that program is going on not only by actual things on the ground, but also in things happening here in this country. I've been called everything on earth. And because of this orchestrated campaign, the president of the university brought her board of trustees, and they voted one morning on December 19th to terminate my employment, to dismiss me. I was denied even coming to campus because they have asked me not to come to campus back in September and October. I wasn't even given any due process rights, even to defend myself in front of this barrage of attacks. Thankfully, though, students like yourselves stood up protesting. Professors rejected this kind of treatment that denies due process rights, that denies freedom of speech and academic freedom. I did not choose to become the poster child of academic freedom and free speech, but now that I am, I'd like to take this opportunity and speak on every campus and alert the people about what's happening around the country. And we have to speak up for the principles that everyone is proud of, that this country was built on, the principle of free association, free speech, freedom of religion. All these great principles, academic freedom, must be brought to the forefront. We cannot accept the policies of J. Edgar Ashcroft. Because if we do, we'll succumb to the past. What he said a week ago is inexcusable. What is trying to put one religion against another. And that is unacceptable because we have to move away from this hot rhetoric that's only trying to polarize the country, especially after September 11th. In addition to that, we have been fighting very, very much against the use of secret evidence. I don't know whether you are aware of it or not. Between April of 1996 and April of 1998, before we were able at least to stop that practice, over 29 people were taken. 28 of them are Arabs and Muslims, many Palestinians, held behind closed door in front of a judge. And when the government brought the accusations, they took the judge aside in a different door, and the judge came back and said, now it's time for you to defend yourself. The accused would say, what are the charges? I can't tell you. Who are the accusers? I can't tell you. What am I supposed to say? It's up to you. I'm not making this up. This is exactly what these 29 individuals had to face. And of course, no one could defend himself against such atrocious court of law, kangaroo type. And all of them were kept behind bars for many years. We fought very hard. We established this coalition called National Coalition to Protect Political Freedom. And my brother-in-law was one of these individuals, and he spent 3 years and 7 months behind bars fighting this ghost. Eventually, we were able to get a federal judge saying that this is fundamentally unfair. This denies due process. It's against the Fifth Amendment, where you're supposed to face whether you're a citizen or non-citizen, because the Constitution doesn't talk about citizens. It talks about persons. All persons must have the right of due process, not just citizens. And he had his days in court. For 2 weeks, the judge listened to every argument the government had to advance, to talk about fronts for terrorist groups, the facts that you invited people, as if we give visas and as if we are at the borders giving people and letting people in. And after everything they presented the judge and after the defense, the judge came back and says, there is no evidence that any of these groups you're referring to are fronts. He didn't say little evidence, some evidence, vague evidence, not so convincing evidence. He said, there is no evidence. And then he blasted them and said, there is evidence. On the contrary, there's evidence in the record to show that these groups were scholarly, were academic, were highly regarded. And then he was released. The government didn't like it. They appealed it to a 3-judge panel in D.C. They approved what the judge said. They refused to block his release. Then they appealed it to then Attorney General Janet Reno, who reviewed both the classified as well as the open record, and she allowed him to go. That was the fight that we thought eventually will vindicate everything that the media and the pro-Zionist groups were trying to portray at us. But this was pre-September 11th world. Now we're living in a different world, post-September 11th world. Although he was released, and although this was behind us after September 11th, he was rearrested, not on any national security claims, but on visa violation. When he was supposedly a national security threat, he was sitting in a jail, minimum security, with many people, having lots of privileges, phone calls, etc. Now that he is not a national security threat, he is in a 23-hour lockdown, 23-hour isolation, with only 1 hour of recreation by himself. He's taken shackled both hands and legs, and by the time he goes out and comes in, he will be strip-searched naked, just to humiliate him extra. No privileges, no phone calls, no TV, no journals, no newspaper, no radio, just sitting there by himself, no library privileges, no visits, just 15 minutes a week to his children, 3 little daughters, American citizens. That's the post-September 11th world that many people across the United States are totally unaware of. 1,200 people are arrested. Only one is charged with anything that has to do with September 11th. What kind of rate is that? I mean, everybody now talks about Japanese internment camps during World War II. Half century later, we apologized. And people look back and said, this is really a dark page in our history. Well, we need now to speak up, to talk about what's happening today to most of these people who had absolutely nothing to do with what happened on September 11th. No one condones, everybody condemns, but to use that as an excuse to crack down on activism, to crack down on people who are speaking their mind, people who left countries where totalitarianism and authoritarianism taking place simply so that they can live in a country to speak their minds and to talk about the atrocities and the injustices that are taking place, and to be punished for that, we shouldn't stand up for that. And I believe this conference and other people, when they start mobilizing, galvanizing, organizing, things would change. Thank you very much, and God bless you.